Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and as we wait, Bernie Sanders in a few minutes, the phones are open for Bernie Sanders voters to tell us what do you think the movement that voted for him can do now in the age of Trump. Our lines are full, and Colin in Bed-Stuy, you're on WNYC. Hello, Colin.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually from Vermont originally. I've known Senator Sanders for a while, and it's been really exciting to see him sort of be embraced by the country as a whole. And he's, you know, been suggesting that millennials start getting involved in politics by running for local office and things like that. But, you know, a lot of these campaigns, they cost a lot of money, and so many of us are, you know, drowning in student debt. So I feel like there's I just don't know how we would begin to start doing that when so many of us just don't have the funds to put together a political campaign.
Colin, thank you. I'll see if I can get that question in when he's here. Bob in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thank you. I'm a Bernie voter, Bernie Sanders voter. Right now, the first thing we have to do is to try to oppose Charles Schumer as the Senate minority leader for the Democrats. Almost all of his campaign money comes from Wall Street. Same thing with Senator Gillibrand. Try to oppose them in any leadership capacity. And the next thing is that Donald Trump, I agree with President Obama, he is somewhat pragmatic. At one time, Trump said he was for a single-payer health insurance system. So maybe the person who scares me in Washington is actually Paul Ryan. He's an Ayn Rand disciple. So maybe we can use some influence mm-hmm. with Trump, President Trump, mm-hmm. to try to salvage at least part of the Affordable Care Act.
Thank you, Bob. Janet in South Plainfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Brian. Nothing is different, really, from whether Hillary was in or Trump is in. We have to pick our progressive causes. For instance, I wish the protesters were out in support of DAPL, and more are now against DAPL. But nothing has changed, and unless we build the progressive movement and push where we can. For instance, Arnold Schwarzenegger is actually an environmentalist, and I'd love to see him head the EPA.
One big thing that's changed is that with Clinton in the White House, you would have had somebody who came with the support of Senator Sanders and the coalition that, you know, got the Democratic Party platform to be as progressive as it was, and a lot of influence in the White House. I don't know that there's going to be any influence in the White House the way it is, which is why I ask if the means to the ends need to be different.
I think that, again, as your previous caller said, Trump is practical. Trump wants to be the hero. And appealing to, for instance, on renewable energy, if presented to him as this is an economic opportunity, you can be like JFK will put a man on the moon in this decade. You can be the president who said in this decade, America will be energy independent.
Janet, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. And we'll go to Deborah in Hackensack next. You're
Hi,
on WNYC.
You?
Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I would like to pick up from a couple of the callers. First, nobody is disputing that Mr. Trump can be a pragmatist because, you know, he did write The Art of the Deal and he has, you know, he has been a businessman a long time. However, the fact that he still, like many Republicans, thinks that climate change is this hocus pocus, Scientology, malarkey is what's concerning because a lot of their platform is fossil fuels. And to piggyback on the other gentleman, the first caller on millennials and Bernie's revolution, I totally agree. But the problem in Washington, whether it's Democrats or Republicans, is that big money has now influenced legislation and policy. So whenever that happens, you're playing a very dangerous game because with things like Citizens United and saying that, you know, a company or a corporation has the same amount of
right.
rights
sure.
as an individual.
So you're agreeing, but do you have any advice for Colin, the first caller, who sounds like a young person who might want to run for office, but he doesn't have a funding base.
I think he should pick up on the coattails. First of all, there's a lot of good things, like Mr. Trump uses Twitter. He should use GoFundMe. And using that as a millennial, I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of people that even with $5, just like Mr. Sanders did, I was one of the people that donated $5, $10 and rallied up my entire family, and we made it to $100. Mm-hmm. So that's just – and then going and speaking to people the way that Trump and Obama picked up on speaking to people and making right. them feel important would be – That coupled with GoFundMe and other outlets mm-hmm. would definitely be able to
start it going. Deborah, thank you very much. We may be just seconds away from having Senator Sanders on the line. We'll see if we can get another call in here. Emma in Brooklyn. Hi, Emma. You're on the air.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I've called in before about Bernie, and I grew up on his street, actually, in Burlington, Vermont, and I know him. Hmm. And he's inspired me to get involved on the ground. I'm going to Standing Rock, North Dakota next week to protest the pipeline, and I think that's really the biggest thing we can do right now is to get involved on the ground, maybe even outside of the system, and really just protest the things that we have problems with and try to help protect the environment and minority groups as much as possible with volunteering and donations.
Thank you very much. Is he there, or do we have time for one more? Looks like we'll have time for one more. Sandy and Wayne. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for taking my call.
It's Brian, but that's all right.
So I'm a 61-year-old Puerto Rican woman living in New Jersey. In other words, a typical Bernie bro. I have been voting and a member of the Democratic Party for 44 years. And I did a write-in because it was legal here in New Jersey. The Democratic Party needs to listen to the 13 million of us in the primaries who voted for Bernie.
And there we go. Sandy, thank you very much. With Bernie Sanders joining us now for 10 minutes as he's doing a series of short radio interviews for his book tour. Thanks to all of you Bernie Sanders voters who called as prelude. The book is called Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In. Senator, thank you. Welcome back to WNYC.
Well, it's great to be with you. And let me start off by saying I agree with Sandy. She's right.
Before we can...
Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
No, what... All right. So my first question is, before we can talk about continuing the movement that backed your campaign, many progressives can't even think about policy yet because they're so horrified that we have what you probably agree is a hate monger as president-elect, and this is not a spectator sport. So many people of color and women feel especially and personally afraid of the consequences for themselves or their loved ones. We've been taking calls like that for a week. My question is, are you willing to take any form of a no-business-as-usual position from day one so as not to normalize this man by dealing with him normally?
My business is to do everything we can to win, to stop his racist and sexist and xenophobic attitude and policies. So the question is, how do we effectively fight back? And the only way that I know and the only way that has ever worked is when millions of people come together, stand together, and say, sorry, after hundreds of years of struggle, this country is not going back to racism. We're going to combat racism. We're not going to exploit racism. We are not going to, after all of the struggles of women, we're not going back to sexism. And we're not going to be throwing millions of people out of this country who were born in Mexico or elsewhere. On the other hand, what we have also got to do is to bring our people together to understand that we are living in an oligarchic form of society where billionaires control our economy. They increasingly control the political life of this country, and they increasingly control the media. And we need a mass movement of millions of people fighting for economic, social, racial, and environmental justice. And when millions of people come together, that's how we win. And that's what our goal has got to be.
On policy, here's a different question than we've been generally asking about Steve Bannon, the Trump advisor. We know the white nationalist questions. BuzzFeed yesterday published a transcript of a speech Bannon gave at a Vatican conference on poverty, of all things, 2 years ago. I don't know if you've seen this, but I want to ask if you think there's some common ground on economic policy suggested in this. He denounced what he called Ayn Rand capitalism, which is too libertarian and reduces human beings to commodities, and crony capitalism, which enables big corporations over entrepreneurs. And he says the Republican Party has been doing this. And I thought that could have been Bernie Sanders saying that. And he also came out of Goldman Sachs, as you know, and he hates Wall Street and thinks more leaders there should have been put in jail after the financial crisis. So my question is, are you aware of this aspect of Steve Bannon, and does it suggest any specific common ground policies that you might find with the Trump administration on progressive economics or banking?
My concern is not Steve Bannon. We will fight Steve Bannon on any of the racist or sexist initiatives he brings forth. My goal, as I've just said, and what I've been talking about for years, is that Wall Street is a corrupt institution. They're business model is fraud. They have got to be broken up. Now, one of the things that we are going to do is to research, and we're doing it right now, every bloody statement that Donald Trump made during his campaign, every promise that he made about all of the things that he wants to do. And you know what? We're going to hold him accountable. He talked about taking on Wall Street. He talked about protecting Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. He talked about rebuilding the infrastructure. He talked about being a quote-unquote champion of the working class. We are going to hold him accountable, and we're going to bring people together to demand that when he speaks about the needs of working families, when he speaks about the needs of high unemployment rates in minority communities, that he actually fulfills what he said. But the bottom line is, again, for me, the only way we succeed is when our people come together. And when we do, we are going to win this thing.
We had a caller before you came on who asked that you oppose Chuck Schumer for Democratic leader because of his ties to Wall Street.
Well, Chuck Schumer has already won we just came from a meeting. I supported Schumer. Schumer will be a very good leader in putting together a diverse caucus. And the point is that right now you have in the caucus some very conservative Democrats, and you have Elizabeth Warren and myself and some other progressives. And I think Chuck will do a very good job in bringing that caucus together. But the main point, again, is grassroots America. The leadership will do what the American people want it to do when the American people stand up. For example, are we prepared to stand up and fight for public colleges and universities being tuition-free? This is an issue I absolutely believe that we can win.
You can win it with a Republican Congress and Trump as president?
Damn right we can. I'll tell you how. Republicans are many things. They're not dumb. And if they look at a generation of young people, if millions of young people say, you know, Paul Ryan, you know, Mr. Trump, Mitch McConnell, we don't want to leave college $50,000 in debt or graduate school $200,000 in debt. And you're never going to get our vote for the rest of our lives if you are not prepared to make public colleges and universities tuition free. The truth is, and it's always been this way, change always comes from the bottom on up, not from the top on down. Now, I'll tell you where I am very concerned, very, very concerned, among many, many other areas, is the issue of climate change. Because Trump's absurd belief that climate change is a hoax, that we have to actually increase fossil fuel production in this country, will not only be disastrous for America, obviously, it will tell every other major country on Earth, India, China, Russia, they don't have to worry about climate change. And this will really bring about horrible, horrible consequences for our kids and our grandchildren in terms of the future of this planet. So I would hope that we can develop a mass movement. I was just out yesterday speaking to thousands of people in opposition to the Dakota Access Pipeline, which must be defeated. But in general, we need to rally the American people. And when we do, the leaders will follow where the people lead.
On the children and grandchildren, I have friends with daughters ages 6 and 12 who together own a fish that they have named Bernie Sanders. And it's giving them some solace. In the general election, the girls were looking forward to the first woman president and were pretty devastated by the outcome. And like many parents, theirs didn't even know what to say. What would you suggest to those or any parents struggling how to explain the electorate, not Donald Trump, but how so many Americans could choose Donald Trump to their kids?
Well, I don't know that it's an explanation for the children, but it's an explanation for all of us, and that is to understand what media in general does not understand and what Trump was smart enough to pick up on. And here's the truth. Economically, we are better off today than we were 8 years ago before Obama became president. That is clear to anyone. But here's another truth. There are many, many, many millions of families today who are living in despair, who are scared to death about the future for their children. These are people, if you're a working woman, Brian, just think for a moment. If you're a working woman making $35,000, $40,000 a year, you're a single mom, and you're spending $15,000 on child care, how do you survive? And there are millions of people in that boat. If you are an elderly worker today, you're 60 years of age, half of people 60 or under, you know how much they have saved up for retirement? They got nothing, not a nickel. What kind of future are they looking for? You're seeing workers today who are making 50, 60% of what they used to make because their factories went off to China. In my state of Vermont, it is not uncommon for people to work two or three jobs. That is the reality. Trump won. I fully acknowledge that he got racists and he got sexists out there, and those certainly aided and abetted Mr. Trump. But I think the reason that he won is he spoke to that pain and he said, hey, trust me, I don't have any plans, but I can do it. I'm going to improve your lives. A lot of pain out there. We've got to acknowledge that pain. And what the book that I wrote, you know, Our Revolution, is very clear about, is a program, whether it is health care, whether it's the economy, whether it's climate change, whether it's criminal justice, immigration reform. We talk in depth about how we can transform the country. That's what I think we got to need to be doing. I apologize to you. I'm going to have to get off.
Senator Sanders, thank you very much. Keep coming on with us, okay?
My pleasure. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bernie Sanders' book is called Our Revolution, A Future to Believe In. Well, we still have some Bernie Sanders supporters who were waiting to talk from before. Lori in Levittown, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I wish we could have asked Senator Sanders about what he thought about the National Popular Vote movement.
We know he supports it.
Okay, but we need to let people know that that has to be passed in only enough states to make another 105 electoral votes before December 19th. And then Hillary can be elected president. And then all these horrors that we're worried about go away.
Right. Well, there's a difference between the National Popular Vote movement and trying to get the current electors not to vote for the candidate who their state voted for in the majority. And I think Senator Sanders has not come out for that. But, Laura, you're keeping the word out there. We're going to do a separate segment on the Electoral College, including this movement, coming up in a few days. And Hope in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Hope.
Oh, hey, Brian. Thank you very much for taking my call. Well, here's what I had wanted to ask. As Senator Sanders had said a few moments ago, we have to go grassroots up. But I were wondering if there were a top-down opportunity for him, namely taking a cabinet or even an ancillary position in President-elect Donald Trump's administration, would he do so?
It's an interesting hypothetical question, but you don't think he'd be offered one, really, do you?
No, I really don't. And so I had, you know, more verbosely phrased it, you know, if it happens or not, you know, just simply hypothetically, which is more realistic. I just wonder what his response would have been.
And I can't even speculate, since he's not here, and it's probably the last thing on his mind that's within the realm of possibility. But Hope, thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC will continue in a minute.